Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio Show. Tracking is still alive and well. Join us as we interview master trackers from around the world. We'll hear their stories, their secrets. So tune in and enjoy all you hear. Welcome.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio Show. Today we have Josh Lane. Josh is a hard-working individual in the world of tracking and bird language. He's part of the Eight Shields team. He is a lead mentor of Village Talk. He has co-authored several things with John Young, including Backyard Alert Bird Language and Eight Gifts of Nature and DVDs of bird language with John Young. You guys should really check out the Eight Shields programs. Josh has really worked a lot of hard hours to make this easy for those of us that don't have a lot of time to dig as deeply as we want to. So they've figured out a lot of shortcuts, and it's a great program. I've been through them myself, and it's just been really great. Josh also contributed to the What the Robin Knows, John Young's book, and that's also great. And Josh, are you there?
I am. Yeah. Thanks for having me here today.
This is great, man. I really want to just virtually shake your hand for all your hard work. I appreciate you, man.
Hey, thanks. Much appreciated. It's really great to see what you guys are doing with the radio show, and I appreciate the chance to be here today with you all.
Yeah, this is great. This is great. I know you are a very accomplished tracker, and you work hard up there at Eight Shields and all the mentoring that you're doing, and I think you have a real deep passion for bird language.
Yes, that's totally right on. It's really an aspect of tracking. I think of it as part of tracking, and it's a different part that we use our ears, we use our bodily sense, our intuition, that sort of overall gestalt sense of what's happening in an environment through the voices of the birds and their postures, to kind of put bird language in a nutshell. That's a big part of it right there. So it's a part of tracking that really captured my interest quite a long time ago, and there's always something new to learn from the birds, so it's been pretty exciting as a journey to go on.
Man, I know. It's just it opens up a whole different avenue that until a person is introduced to it, they may never even grasp it.
Yes, absolutely, because it's funny. It's going on all the time. There's these signals, these communications between the birds and other wildlife, and it's literally happening every second. I mean, it's just a question of whether we realize it's there and that we can tune into it, and of course we totally can tune into it. Once we realize it's happening and we start to listen for that, we realize there's a whole story going on, and it's happening constantly, whether we're in a wilderness or in a city. There's great things to watch for with the birds.
Yes, sir. And to me, it seems like developing our normal five senses has a big thing to do with it. And, one of my mentors said that hearing is like the layers of an onion, and you can peel back the layers. Much like hearing, you can listen farther and farther and hear these minute things that you would normally never know what was going on, and that's part of bird language too.
Absolutely, and those layers of that sort of onion of hearing, if you will, it's like they can extend out really far, and part of the question is, how much flexibility do we have in our awareness to be able to spread our attention out, and it really comes down to, can we be in the moment fully? Because if we're not, if we're lost in our mental chatter or, worries about, the future or all these other concerns, and it takes us out of the moment, we're going to miss so many of those layers of information, those sounds, those signals that are coming through. So really, you know, it's an opportunity to practice mindfulness and to really actually be in the moment with all of our senses, like you're talking about there.
You know, that is almost a whole other talk, just how it brings us to oneness. We can't even go there right now. So just in case we have listeners that have never heard of bird language, Josh, would you mind explaining that?
Sure, yeah, I'd be happy to. You know, on the most basic level, we're talking about a communication system that's happening in nature, and it's happening across species. So it's not just a robin communicating with another robin about danger, you know, on the landscape. It's actually when that robin vocalizes, the other birds are tuning into that. They're actually eavesdropping on each other and propagating these signals about whether an area is safe or whether there's danger there, you know, whether there's an aerial predator or a ground predator or some other disturbance. And this is communicated in several different ways. Of course, you know, we have the vocalization. So we have, you know, all the songs and calls and alarm notes and things like that that birds make. That's part of the story. But along with each of those signals, there's also postures. So the actual physical way the bird is holding itself, you know, as part of that broadcast of information, whether, you know, the bird is doing its thing, feeding on the lawn, and then all of a sudden, if that robin flies up into a branch and it stops feeding and it's looking around, you know, it doesn't even have to say anything, but that's a communication right there. And the other animals pick up on it. And, you know, it's not just the birds, but it's the mammals, too. They're totally tapped into that communication system of the birds, and they use it to really know what we're up to and what other mammals are up to, because it's pretty dangerous, you know, to survive as a mammal in the wild. You have to really be in the moment, and they're taking advantage of any information they can get that'll give them early warning of danger, and the birds are a great way for them to get that information.
Yeah, wow, that is awesome. So these birds are making different vocalizations, and it seems like the alarm calls are one of the great sounds to tune in on. And from what you've said, is their postures also give us a lot of input. So I think I've heard it called let's see, what is that word? Alarm signatures, and like one of them is the parabolic, and one is, what are some of those called?
Yeah, so you're thinking maybe of the shapes of alarm?
Our alarm shapes. That's
yeah. Right, yeah. So basically, you know, everything has a disturbance field, you could put it that way. You know, a truck coming down the street, barreling down, is going to have a certain disturbance that it creates. Or a coyote moving through the brush, trotting through, is going to have a certain level of disturbance it can create. Or maybe a Cooper's hawk. That's, you know, one we like to use a lot in teaching as an example, because a Cooper's hawk has the ability, they're an accipiter, and they are a type of hawk that specializes actually in hunting and eating birds. So the disturbance field they create as they move across the landscape is massive, because they have a striking range, you know, within 100 yards. They could outfly some kinds of birds, and they can dart around branches super quick. I've seen them skim along rooftops and then drop down at the last second along the roof and then double back around the house and pop up over the roof on the other side. So they do these maneuvers that are fantastic to watch. But if you're a bird being chased by a Cooper's hawk, you're in trouble. So they have like a huge, huge disturbance field that radiates around them, because the other birds are tuning in and they want to know where that Cooper's hawk is. So, you know, what this does is it creates what we call these shapes of alarm, because every predator has a different effect it's going to create on its environment, you know, and it's based on what is the danger level to a bird that predator has. And really, you start to realize through this that the birds are really tuned in. You know, they know the predators that move through their environment, and they probably have encounters with them on a daily or weekly basis, you know, depending on what kind of predator it is and how big its home range is. But, you know, a lot of birds, you know, they come back to the same territories year after year. Some of them don't even migrate and they stay in the same place. And, you know, if they make it through their first year, which is where a lot of the bird mortality is, if they get past that, you know, and survive, you know, they've learned a lot in that first year. And the longer they hang out in that territory, the more they're going to have encounters with these different predators. You know, and not just predators, too. Other mammals, you know, people, cars, you know, different things can cause these different disturbance patterns. And what happens is you see the birds react to them in different ways, and there's sort of a pattern language around it where you can actually predict who's causing an alarm based on, you know, how high up off the ground a bird goes, you know, the frequency of the call it's using has a lot of information in it, and how the other birds in the area are responding. So you can put all these together, and it's kind of like the ultimate jigsaw puzzle or like a Rubik's Cube, because it's kind of a, more of a three-dimensional thing, or even four-dimensional, because it's got time involved in how the alarm changes. So that's kind of excellent. Just a little bit about the shapes.
Yeah, that is awesome. I always think about this bird language thing. It has become like 24/7 for me, and it's chaotic. It really is, trying to figure out what all is going on. And, you know, my knowledge is limited. I've probably put in 15 years on it, but it hasn't been like, you know, as concentrated as what some people get to do. But I remember when I learned how to tell where the snakes were. And I was in Arkansas, and I was watching the indigo bunting. I was just learning my birds, and I was listening to his call. I was way out in the woods, followed him to a power line cutover, and I was watching him. I had my binoculars, and I'm watching him. He's singing and stuff, bright blue bird. And I started hearing this crazy sound. I knew it was blue jays, but I didn't know I had just learned about bird language. So I was like, I guess I better figure out what that is. So I made my way. It was about 100 yards away. And as I got there, there was about 10 blue jays. And they were in about a 10-foot circle, as best I can remember. They were about 4 foot off the ground. And they were just all looking into the center of their own circle. And, I mean, my heart just started racing because I realized before I seen it. And, you know, I had my binoculars because it's really hard to see. It was a copperhead, and the intensity of them doing that, you know, I was like, my God, I could feel it, you know? So, you know, I backed off, of course, because I'm scared of snakes at the time. But then about a month later, I heard what I thought might be the same thing again. And, you know, I made my way out through the woods, and it was the same thing. So you can get these repeatable results, and that's kind of how you learn each predator. I think the blue jays are good for a couple of things, but I'll never forget the feeling that goes through my body when I hear that particular alarm. I mean, it's like, if I can hear it, you know, it's a snake. It's a poisonous snake or a nest robber, and it might be 200 yards away, and I can, you know, I can say there's a snake over there.
That's awesome. And you know what I want to ask you about that is, when you kind of relive that and remember that feeling you're describing, where does it hit you in your body? What happens?
It hits me in the abdomen, right above the stomach, and it's fear.
Hmm. Yeah, that's so important. You know, I'm so glad you bring that up, you know, as we're talking about bird language, because it's not just the sounds. You know, there is a feeling broadcast in those sounds and that fear that you're talking about. I mean, if you've ever, for listeners out there, you know, a good one to relate this to is like in the springtime when you have a robin nesting in your yard, and, you know, at some point those fledglings are going to start exploring, and maybe they'll fall out of the nest and be on the ground and they can't fly yet. And you've ever been in that situation and there's a cat nearby, you know, the mother or father bird, you know, like the parent birds will be up above just looking down at their young one, and they're just, you know, alarming with this teek, and it's that feeling that you're describing of super intensity, and it broadcasts right through the sound. And so that's so important, you know, to tune into that. And I had a chance when I was in the Kalahari a couple of years ago, visiting with a Bushman community there, and we were out with some hunters who, you know, kind of grown up really tuned in to bird language because their life there really depends on it, with large carnivores like lions and other things that are out in the brush, or really dangerous snakes too. And, you know, they had explained, I was there with John Young and a few other people, and we were out in the bush, and they had explained earlier to John about the call of this pied babbler that would alert them to when lions were moving in the daytime. And John and myself and Dan Gardoki and a few others were sitting there on the ground in the shade with these old hunters after we'd been tracking that morning, and the pied babbler start to go off in the distance. And, you know, John's picking up on it, and he's thinking, oh, that's the sound that they told us about. You know, maybe there's lions over there. And these hunters pick up that he's stressed out. So they ask him what's up. And he says, well, isn't that the babbler alarm you told us about? Isn't there a lion over there? And, you know, they said, they just actually all started laughing. And they're going, no. And so we asked, well, isn't that the same sound? And all three of these old hunters all at once tapped their solar plexus. And they said, no, can't you feel it? They said, there's not that feeling of alarm. You know, the babblers are just doing their own thing. They're interacting with each other. So even though it had the sound of, you know, this super intense, that could almost be an alarm, because sometimes territorial calls can be really intense, but it didn't have that same feeling. So we all tuned into that, and then we got it. You know, we're like, oh, yeah, right, you know. It doesn't have that super tense feeling you're talking about. And they said, you know, you always got to depend on that feeling to go with the call. So it was really neat for us to be in a whole new environment with birds we didn't really know, and get to, you know, see these principles in action. It was very cool.
That's great, great story. And so now I want to, you know, I want to throw in there or ask, you know, you can learn the principles of bird language, but how do you, what's a, it's a major, not a whole nother radio show. How do you get to that point where you can feel the intensity, you know, the jungle oneness, you know, sensitivity, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, like we were talking about earlier, it's that opportunity we have every moment to ask, are we going to be in our senses, or are we going to be distracted thinking about something else? You know, and, you know, it's really easy, especially with how busy we are in our modern culture, you know, to have things we got to think about. We're working on the computer for work, all these things mentally. You know, we have a million distractions, Facebook, all kinds of things. So there's always something to think about, a bill we got to pay, we got to worry about. But the birds are inviting us to ask, you know, hey, you know, that stuff will always be there, but can we let that go in this moment and actually tune our ears out and in the distance, hearing the quiet sounds? You know, can we notice what our nose is picking up in the air? Can we feel with our skin the feeling of the breeze right now, and just the feeling of actually being fully in our body? You know, to open up our eyes, to really soak in everything around us. And, you know, through that, through having a practice like that, where we actually make time every day to get into that kind of space where we're fully here. And, you know, a great way to do that is to have a set spot and just get out right in your backyard, in your garden, or at your local park, and go there every day if you can, even if it's just for a few minutes in the morning, drinking some coffee, stepping out your back door. We've had people do this in the middle of the city too. You know, you can learn that bird language connection pretty much anywhere. And just to take 5 minutes and just sit there and see how much you can fully be there and listen into the distance, look into the distance and feel in your body, You know, does it feel tense? Does it feel relaxed? So that's kind of, in a nutshell, you know, the simplest way I could offer, you know, to step towards that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you say that, and of course, I think back all the time I have put into it, you know, and every time it is so rewarding because not only are you learning, but you're grounding and you're just relaxing and meditating and all your stress disappears. And it's actually quite an amazing thing, a gift that we've been given and, you know, the ancestors have handed down to us.
It really is. And especially today, I feel like, well, we've always needed it. You know, it's always helped us to stay alive. It's helped all of our ancestors around the world in different places to stay alive, you know. And but today, you know, you see how much we need that reminder to get into our senses, to really be in the moment. And it's just nice to know that the birds are there, you know, waiting for us to tune in that way.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Josh, real quick. So I know you're also a very accomplished tracker. Do you have a story or would you care to share a story of tracking that may or may not have included a spot of bird language?
Oh, sure. That'd be fun. Yeah. Yeah, because they definitely tie together, you know, and just the story that's popping into my mind right now, thinking about that journey of learning those shapes of alarm, you know, and, you know, it took me a while, like you're describing, you know, a really long journey of getting out there, because you can conceptually learn those shapes pretty quickly, like which mammals and which other animals will cause certain shapes, but, you know, there's something to be said for having the experience and really actually encountering those things in the field. And getting that into your body, not just in your mind, but like you said, the feeling when you heard those jays with a snake, you know, the feeling of that. And, you know, for me, that was a long-term question I held, you know, how do I really learn all these different shapes? So I would just get out there. That was my answer, you know, get out there and sense and look and listen and feel. And, you know, over time, this started to develop. I remember one day, a story of intensity like you're talking about. I was working at a camp at the time. This is 15, maybe 20 years ago. And it was up in Vermont, summer camp. We were doing wilderness skills with kids up there. And I remember working with another one of the staff. We were just hiking in the woods on our off time, tracking around a little bit. You know, asking questions about, you know, what mammals might be here, you know, in these woods. And we were just kind of checking it out. And I remember it was a maple forest, mostly maple trees. And we were walking down this trail in the woods. And in the distance, you know, I start to hear a whole chorus of crows, you know, and they were super excited and agitated. And you could feel it through the sound. It wasn't just that casual kind of but it was like, you know, when you have 50 crows up in a tree all looking down, yelling at something, and you can, with these shapes of alarm, as you get to know those sounds, you can almost see it in your mind's eye, how the birds are positioned,
yep.
You know, and kind of read into the sound that way. So it really sounded like a bunch of them clumped up on the top of a tree looking down. And, you know, oftentimes that could be an aerial predator. You know, that could be a hawk that's up in that tree and they're harassing it. Sometimes it's an owl, you know. So those were the first things that kind of jumped into our minds, me and this other friend, and we were just kind of trying to predict what might be there, because that's a really great habit to get into when you hear an alarm, you know, to do just what I described, where you try to picture the positioning of the birds, you know. How high up are they? You know, which direction are they facing? You know, are they looking down, looking up as they call? What kind of birds are attracted in there? And what does it sound like all around that area, too? So,
you know, those are tracking questions. And so, I mean, you're tracking bird sound.
That's it right there. You know, and I've heard Tom Brown Jr., you know, the real famous tracker, talk about that. that, you know, he calls these concentric rings. You know, bird language is part of that. But he talks about how there's not really a separation between tracking and awareness, which is the study of the concentric rings. So, you know, it's totally it right there. And we were asking those tracking questions about the bird sounds. And,
yeah,
you know, we got closer and closer. And now the anticipation is building. We just can't wait to see. You know, we'd love to see. Because sometimes, you know, you get these sounds in the distance, and by the time you get there, whatever it is moved off. So you got to know that getting in, that can be a little bit frustrating. So you got to build your patience. But, you know, we moved slowly. We moved quietly as we could. We worked our way in, and what we found was that in the middle of this maple forest, there was this one really old white oak tree. And you could tell that maybe 100 years ago there had been a pasture there, you know. And this was a shade tree that had been left, you know, for the animals there to get shade under. There was an old stone wall next to it. And so it had those big sprawling branches that trees don't usually get if they grow up in the middle of the forest. But you could tell, therefore, that it had once had an open area around it. So it's, you know, big, massive trunk standing out like a sore thumb. No other tree like it nearby. And white oak, which is also an interesting tree to track. And we got up there, and who did we see up in the top of the tree but this very, very cool, elusive animal, dark, almost black fur, almost like a mix between a fox and a weasel up in a tree, and it was a fisher.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. We were standing at the base of the tree. The crows were going crazy. And this fisher actually tore down the tree and jumped over us and then bounded off into the distance, and we couldn't believe it.
Wow.
And then a branch fell out of the tree from its passage. We had to jump out of the way. And then another one comes tearing down. So there were two fishers up in this tree. And
that's
they took
crazy.
Off. And they actually jumped over us, and never seen anything like it. It was amazing. And then, you know, after a little while, the crows eventually, now that the fishers had left, they gave up their interest and you know, took off. But I'll never forget that moment.
That is insane. I mean, what were they doing up there?
That is the big question. You know, they climb up a lot of trees to actually pull out flying squirrels from, you know, hollow, rotten branches. I found that in the snow where you see the fisher tracks going right up to a dead snag, and then at the base of the snag, there's just an explosion of punky wood and squirrel fur, you know, where they had climbed in and gotten it. But in this case, I don't know what they were going after up in the top of that tree, you know. Definitely a longstanding mystery.
Yeah, they very well could have been squirrels. I know they like white oaks. Wow, that's awesome.
You know, and we wouldn't have had that experience if we were so lost in our conversation as we walked down that trail that we didn't open our ears to that bird language, you know. So that's what led us there, was listening for that.
Yes, sir. You know, Josh, you've been involved with Eight Shields for some time, and you're mentoring people out there. And first off, I want to send out a gratitude for that, because, you know, all of us are trying to help people, but, you know, you're out there really, really doing it. And I know that hours have just got to be piling up on you every week. And I really just want to thank you, because we need more people like you, you know, bringing people back and, you know, waking them up, so to speak.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. You know, it's a passion to share that with people. You know, I love doing that work of mentoring, especially when I get to talk one-on-one with a person over time and just, you know, ask the questions and hear the stories and, you know, over time hear through that art of questioning that we do to hear people's stories get expanded and deeper and richer with more sensory detail, and you can feel the connections building. So it just brings me so much, you know, and it's something I think about. I heard Tom Brown say, you know, because we're connected in with that lineage of coyote teaching, that the coyote teacher always learns more than the student, you know, and And, you know, from each person that I get a chance to interact with, there's just so much learning that happens for me. So it's really rewarding that way to get to hear those stories and feel that energy come from the landscape through people's, you know, interactions that way.
Yeah, sir. Wow. That is awesome. Well, we've talked about some things real quick. How did you get into all this? What's your natural history?
Yeah, right on. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Connecticut, not too far from New York City. And, you know, for me, it was, I was basically on video games constantly as a kid. You know, that was pretty much what me and my friends did. We'd play video games. And I wasn't outside a whole ton, you know, so that was kind of where it started. But I had this, you know, interest in wilderness skills, you know, finding arrowheads and things like that, and just this intrigue of what would it be like to live in a survival situation was something I always thought about as a kid, but I didn't really have an outlet for that. You know, I did get to go camping, you know, with my folks or do gardening with my grandparents, and that was, you know, just a little pulse of nature connection that fed me. You know, but that's the challenge in a lot of places is the kids naturally have this desire to connect with nature, but there's, you know, the question is, where are the mentors? Where are the, you know, the people to help stoke that fire? So for a long time that, you know, kind of smoldered away for me. But eventually, you know, and I was kind of like a punk skateboard kid, you know, trying to do something different. And eventually, you know, I read a book by Tom Brown. I forget which one it was, but it really impacted me, you know, where he shared, you know, what it's like to live in survival situations and not really feeling that word survival, but kind of feeling through that actually the closeness with the earth.
Yes.
And the tracking through that. So I was actually too young to go to his school at the time, but I ended up getting connected with Mark Morey and Vermont Wilderness School. And, you know, any chance I could get, this was back in high school, I'd go help out and learn things and work at the summer camps. And, you know, that connected me with John Young and with other trackers. And, you know, since then, I've pretty much any time I get a chance to learn tracking with people, I take that up, you know, and it's just grown. And, of course, the animals, too, you know, have been the best teachers along the way.
Wow. That's great, man. That's great. And so, you know, I never got to go to the tracker school. You know, I've put in thousands and thousands of hours with, you know, education, media, books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that's cool because I hear a lot of people, you know, almost I think everybody that I've ever talked to read a Tom Brown book. And that's the same for me. My friend gave me a book when I was 15, so that's how that started. So that is really cool that you got to go hang out with Mark Morey and help him, and he was a mentor, and then it blossomed and grew from there. That's awesome. Any projects coming up?
Yeah, you know, well, I mean, the big one we've worked on, I think you mentioned, is, you know, backyard bird language and just continuing to, you know, offer training through that. If anybody's interested, you know, you can go to yourbackyardbirds.com. To check that out, where we, you know, basically walk you through learning the real basics of bird language in a deep way over a month's time. So, you know, just keeping that alive is really important to me. We put in a lot of time to develop that. It was, you know, just a lot of fun and a lot of fun to see what's been transforming for people, you know, through that. And then for myself, too, I've also been exploring martial arts and wellness through Qigong and other practices like that. So that's been a passion for me, is, you know, blending that with nature connection. You know, so that those are some offerings I'm developing as well that'll be out in the future time here.
Excellent.
Is looking at that blend.
Excellent. Yes, sir. All this energy, finding your own energy, expanding it, it all ties in, doesn't it?
Totally, because it really is all energy and motion, you know, whether it's expressing itself through the voices of a bird or through the feeling in our body, the way we move ourselves in our lives. It's all energy.
Yeah. You know, I can't remember which program it was that you put out, but the one I went ahead and got included video, downloads, sounds, and it was just like this great way to learn bird language.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'm glad that that was helpful. That's, the Backyard Bird Language.
That's the one. Yep.
There, yeah.
I would invite anybody who wants to learn this or even has experience to go ahead and grab that, because it's you know, you can learn any, you can always learn more. And that one opened up some different things that I hadn't thought of or found on my own. So, I mean, God, it was awesome.
All right on. So glad to hear that.
Yes, sir. John, or I'm sorry, Josh, I know your time is limited. Is there anything that you may have wanted to talk about that we didn't cover?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we definitely covered a lot there. Don't want to oversaturate everybody with information, but really just that invitation to ask, you know, what are the birds talking about right now in your yard? And, you know, something that I work with people on when I do coaching and stuff like that and mentoring is working with busy people who, you know, are looking for that groundedness. And, you know, maybe some of you listening to this will relate to this, but it's so easy when you're working on your computer to get lost in what that world is, or the other things that keep us busy in our minds. But, you know, just that simple practice of cracking open the window, whether you're at your office or you're at home and you're on the computer, and see if you can learn to keep part of your awareness out there, you know, and what the birds are saying right in your backyard, and part of your awareness on the feeling in your body, you know, your feet on the ground and the air around your skin, you know, just simple little things like that that they can be a little challenging at first, but even just to put it into your Google Calendar reminder, whatever you need to remind yourself to do it, and set an alarm a few times every day to remind yourself, hey, you know, can I get into my senses for a moment? Can I listen, you know, beyond the walls, beyond the windows, beyond my thoughts out into the distance and connect to that bigger flow of life? So that would be just, I guess, a parting thought that I'd like to share with everybody, an invitation, you know, to expand the senses that way.
Yes, sir. That's excellent. I think what I'm hearing is, every minute you put in is a minute farther down the road, you know. That's excellent. I mean, I know my life has changed and enriched because of it, and I really appreciate you being on the radio tonight, Josh. I really do.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the chance to, you know, get to reflect on some of these things. And you know, hopefully this, you know, can open the door for, you know, some of the folks who tune in here to spark that connection with the birds. So, yeah, thank you so much for the chance to be here tonight.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And maybe we can talk about doing a part two someday, okay?
That would be great. I'd love that.
All right, Josh. Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.